money thing? Security? A nice house? I guess that's important to some people.
No, it's not important to some people, Robbie. It's important to all people.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. We'll have Matt Byrne here in a second. S&P futures up 1, NASDAQ futures up 1375. So we're trying to build on last Friday's rally, even though Friday's rally still left us with a down week. But still, Friday was pretty strong. We were up, let me tell you what we were up. We were up, I got to get the right page up to do that. What do you think? We were up 307 in the Dow, 57 in the S&P. And 199 in the NASDAQ. So Friday was a pretty serious bounce back rally from the earlier in the week. However, we still have the 10-year note creeping along here this morning. It's up another 7 basis points, which isn't a lot, but we're pushing 4.5 here, 4.448, which is really close to 4.5. And we have oil continuing to creep up. Well, actually, it's down 60 cents today, but we're talking 86.29. Gas is over $4 everywhere around here. That's an issue. And we've got gold up another $13 today, $23.58. So we've got sort of conflicting stuff here. And we'll have Greg with us here in a second because he got started. Now he's in his normal guest spot on a Monday. He's going to tell us all about the progress on his website that will soon be available to Stocks and Jacks people. And I tell you what, when he started it, I'm like, yeah. Well, now I'm looking at it. It's pretty freaking good. Matter of fact, it's really good, and I think everybody's going to really be happy to see it. And
yeah, we got some fun stuff queued up for everybody.
And, you know, it's funny, Greg. I was thinking this morning because our commercials are a little old, at least people haven't figured that out. Making a couple of new commercials for PTI and me and... you know, it's funny. I've got one that's ready to roll. Hopefully, we'll do that one today. But tomorrow, or maybe not tomorrow, but I've got another one. You know, what's funny is that people are a lot more armed today to make whether you should or whether you shouldn't has to do obviously with your situation and so forth. Because I mean, one thing you never, even though you're not supposed to, you never should just give blanket investment advice because you don't know who you're talking to. If somebody, comes in who's like 90 or something, and says they have every piece of their cash in like Donald Trump's new company, you might say, "Gee, that's a little aggressive" or something, you know. But I mean, it all really depends on the person, which is really what we emphasize here at PTI. But your stuff that you're doing, when I say your stuff, what the trading help on your website.
We're just trying to do a little bit of information, right. a little bit of entertainment, a little bit of education, and mix it up with a couple tools to really get the concept of volatility and what is already out there kind of to compare to what you have in your head. So, for example, if you're thinking that SPY or something is is going to make you 15% next year, well, then you can check it against the market and kind of maybe design a trade to do that specific thing. So it's an important...
Greg, your mic is not working at all.
So oh.
Why don't you grab that other mic? Not sure why it's not working, why it's not plugged in. Why don't you try that other mic for a second? I'll talk while you hook the other one up. Try the other one.
Let's see if this one works.
I'm hearing you, so that's the weird part. I don't know why it's not working on the board.
Yeah.
Man, well, I'm hearing them on either mic.
Well, if this is a little better, I can stay on this one.
Matt, is this one working?
You there with us? Is this a little bit better? I'm on the right side, so.
I guess. All right. I bet both of them are working, but we'll see. It's one of the problems when you have a different producer every day. Everybody's got their own little stuff on the board, and it takes a minute for everybody to get it all together. But, you know, what I was about to say, Greg, as a lead-in, not to interrupt, is the market, you know, when I started, it was a whole different world. And it was the early 80s, and interest rates were 15%, you know, 15.5. Market was 800 maybe, you know, depending on what little spot you had in there. I think the market was actually down from like 1968. It wasn't, it was flat. It was, you know, or it was up on something a little bit. So the idea of the buy and hold strategy for like 14 years didn't work, you know. So, I mean, this whole idea, all right, put your money in the market, you know, all the talking heads just telling you, just give them your dough, don't worry, it'll just grow like a weed. Well, it didn't. And, you know, it was funny in those days when I could see your grandpa or your dad somewhere. At a cocktail party with all the 1%ers with his pinky up in the air, saying, "You know, I'm gonna cash in my CD at 15.5%. I'm gonna go try and find that mutual fund guy because there were no indexes. I mean, there was very little in terms of options. There were no stock futures of any kind. I'm gonna go try and find that mutual fund guy. He's probably painting houses somewhere, but I'll go find him and I'm gonna put my money in the market. You'd have been A, laughed at, B, probably evicted from the party. The idea of you doing that,
yeah,
was I mean, you think today somebody who...
There's something to be said for opportunity with when nobody else is looking.
But I'm saying what I'm getting to is I'm alluding to your what you're doing on your site and what I do for people is then it was a decision that was that, I'll use the term abrupt. You literally had to cash in the CD and you had to go to, you know, like I say, try and find the mutual fund guy, because there were no indexes, there was no OEX, there was none of that stuff. So you had to make this tremendous decision. Where now, as you allude to on your site all the time, you don't have to make this momentous of a decision. You can. There's all kinds of tools to get you a little hedged, you know, a lot hedged, whatever you feel you have to be. There's all kinds of shades of gray now. There wasn't back then.
Right.
So that's, I guess, a long story short, but don't tell it. But once you carry on from here, because what your stuff does is says, if I want to get a little bit long, I don't have to go out and buy every stock in the world. I can buy this call spread, or I can sell this put spread or something. You can make the decision on a smaller basis. You can take a little piece of it.
Yeah. So for our setup, what we did was created an option tool for people who like options, and then we have tickers with ranges that are based on the option volatility. But so there's one for the option trader, and then there's one for the stock trader, meaning you pick kind of which you like to or prefer to do. So with the option tool, you put in your stock symbol and your price where you think it might go to, decide whether you want it to be a credit or debit spread, and pick a directional or a range-bound trade, and it suggests maybe what you might want to talk to your broker about, and then figure out a trade from there. Otherwise, if you go to the ticker section, what happens is you can see the estimated range based on the implied volatilities, and kind of put in your buy or sell orders based on that. So if you're doing, call it, putting a little bit of money into SPY every month or something, you can check out the weekly expected range and the monthly expected range and kind of toss in some buy orders. If you get filled, great. If you don't, you know, okay. But it's a different way to kind of go about your buy program and or trading program, because
it's something a broker should be able to help you with, but they don't.
Yeah, it's
we just, do, but
just another way to kind of set your expectations for what's coming this month based on implied volatility. And you don't have to understand it. You just kind of look at the ranges, and that's the best kind of guess that us professionals use also. So if you've got, I don't know, $1,000 this month to drop into SPY, there's a couple ways to do it. You can do it via options, or you could do it via stock. You click in, you type in SPY, and then you get your expected ranges based on the implied volatilities, and you can kind of get a better idea of what's coming based on those option prices. So it's pretty simple to break down. We'll have maybe a YouTube video that goes through it.
Are you going to be the star of the video?
I was thinking of doing it with AI, but maybe I'll do it.
Why don't we get, what was the name, who was the Maxim Girl of the Year, who was my catcher for a while? Why don't we get her?
Well, yeah, you can make you can make your own AI person. And,
well, we have that. We have somebody right there. God. I forget her name. I'll remember it. But I'll tell you what, I had a huge advantage when batters were looking at her and not the ball coming in.
Right.
Just saying. I can't remember her name. I'll think of it. But yeah, I think it's pretty exciting because you give people like three or four choices.
Yeah, for the stock traders, you can look at the ranges for the actual stock. For the option traders, it picks up on credit versus debit.
April Rose.
Yeah. Adult film.
No. She actually did a big thing on one of the sports stations, on ESPN or one of them, what's his name? The guy that does the Bears. It was a tackle back in the... God, I'm going horrible on names. I'll think of his name, too.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about. Big guy. He was on with Mike North forever. Dan Jiggins.
Oh, Dan Jiggins. Nice.
Real nice guy. I knew him. He lived across the hall from he lived across the hall from Robin, the lady who died earlier in the year. Up on Sheridan Road. It was the funniest. His girlfriend, Dan went to Harvard. He's in the Ivy League Football Hall of Fame. Real bright guy and real nice guy. He's going out with this blonde lady who was like a dancer. Beautiful girl, really pleasant. And they decide they're getting married, right? So I wasn't around. I said to Robin, hey, what was the wedding party look like? She goes, all the guys were big and black, all the girls were tall and blonde. I go, really? But no, I think they're still married. I mean, I thought they were terrific people. His daughter does a TV show, does the news, right? What's her name? Karen Jiggett? Not Karen.
Oh,
Lauren,
yeah.
Lauren Jiggett?
Lauren Jiggett, yeah.
Yeah, I know her.
Yeah, she lives right near me. Wow. Very pleasant. I mean, they had a great career. You know, so the good things happen to good people, you know, sometimes. Hopefully more all the time. But anyway, no, I'm pretty excited about this, Greg, because people think they got to be all in or all out, and you really don't. I mean, the tools are there. I mean, if somebody, you know, somebody feels like they, obviously if you've been in the market for a while, certainly in the last quarter, I mean, you've done exceptionally well, and you don't have to get out if you think you're getting a little nervous. You can hedge, you can do something, but also
you can drop your buy order.
But also,
you could raise your sell order.
But what you're talking about, you don't necessarily, like, if you think, let's pick the market instead of picking a stock. Spiders are $518.77, or up 34 cents this morning. Now, if you think there's enough gas in the spider for another, it's up, you know, 8 to 10% already this year. So say you're really bullish and you say, well, you know what, it's already up so much. I think it's going to go up another 6%. All right, so that's 30 points. All right, so that means you think it's going to go from 518 to, let's be easy and say 550. I mean, now that's
so
all,
in our setup, you would choose 550, and then did you want to pay for the trade or did you want to get paid for your trade? Did you want a credit spread or a debit spread?
Well, I was going to say you could buy maybe the 515, 550. If it gets there, you're not going to make the whole amount of money because you have to pay for it, but my point was, if you think you've got 30 to the upside, I mean, nobody really knows what you have to the downside. And I'm not going to be doggy downer, but, you know, if a asteroid whacks New York or something, it could be 350. You know, so, you know, you're looking to make 30 points to the upside on something that you could go the other way. But if you did what your thing, one of the choices your thing would give, if you want to pay for it, maybe you would buy that spread. Say you paid, you know, $15 for it. Well, or $12 or $10 or whatever the hell it's priced. Maybe I can look and see. But you're not paying the full amount.
Right. You know. And that's the idea. We can toss the link into the show notes. And for the option tool, you have to put in your email. But for the stock tool, you click on tickers and it shows you the estimated range is based on the implied volatility.
Well, what?
But yeah, you're exactly right in that if you put that into the selector, it says either you want to be long from the naked calls 518 calls, and the vertical spread would be the 518 550.
So, but what now? When you talk about implied volatility, why don't you define that for everybody? I mean, everybody should know, but that doesn't mean they do.
Implied volatility is a way that traders measure the predicted, or they measure how far it goes and how fast it goes. So there's no way to know the future. We try to estimate kind of what happens in between now and a certain time. The higher the volatility number, the more premium your option is going to be worth, because there's more back and forth. So it's a way that we quantify the it's the variance, but it's really the violence of the movements. So the higher, the more movement, the higher the volatility usually.
Well, you know, I mean, the mathematical definition is when you look at the Black-Scholes model, which was the first, well, it wasn't the first one, but the first one that anybody ever used. Because actually, you know, there were predecessors to that model, Craig, that we went through at University of Chicago when I was in grad school, and they just weren't any good. And when I say they weren't any good, they didn't make a whole lot of sense. Because a lot of the pricing volatility, stock pricing, should already be in the stock price, right?
Right.
So the idea was, what is the option going to have different than that? And so they've settled on something called the standard deviation.
Yeah.
Which worked mathematically, but it doesn't, I mean, it really doesn't work.
It works great as long as you're within the 70% of the time in the first standard deviation.
But it has.
But the other 30% of the time, nobody knows the future, and it's silly to try to. But the Black-Scholes is very good for the first 70% of price movement.
You know, the Black-Scholes did not have, had actually several weaknesses to it. First of all, it's not normal. It's not a normal distribution. It's a log normal, right?
Right.
You can't go below zero. So that's a little funky to start with, but I'm not getting everybody math lessons. But it has kind of several weaknesses, which any model would. One of it is it's very accurate the further out you go, because you start getting really close to the time frame, then your unlikely move is now, I mean, if you, for instance, earnings, well, the way the earnings have been lately, I don't know if I can even say this, but if you're doing an option out a year and it moves a couple of bucks, it's not a big deal, right? But if it's 10 minutes to 3 on expiration and it moves a couple of bucks, it's a real big deal.
Right. And one of the most famous, what is it, the most famous kind of definitions of that standard deviation or variance or whatever you want to call it is the VIX.
Yeah.
And what happens is a simple way to understand the VIX would be, if the VIX is trading 16, you can expect your stock to be up or down, call it 16% at some point within the next year.
Yes.
So 32, from top to bottom.
The annualized standard deviation.
Right. So from what's Spiders right now? 520?
518.
Yeah. So approximately call it 16% of that. You know, it could be 80 points higher or 80 points lower at any point within the next 12 months. So the idea is you want to set your expectations such that, hey, if it comes down 80 points at some point in this year, you know, am I ready to buy some more, or am I panic selling all the way down, and that kind of stuff, meaning what are your expectations? So,
but the other,
it's a good way to,
the other major weakness, and this is not really something, a little bit of a weakness in an index, but in an individual stack it's a huge weakness, because the implied volatility is the market's judgment of what the volatility is going to be the next year. In other words, say a stock's trading in at 18, you know where the stock is, you know the interest rate, you know the time to expiration, you know all that good stuff. So, but then there's a price. You back into the volatility using the price instead of using the volatility to give you the price. It's the mathematical reversal of it. But the weird part, though, when you're trading a stock, which I don't think you do as much of, but even corn and other stuff, same thing, is if a stock is trading at a 16 versus a 40.
So Tesla versus spiders.
Yeah. But it, well, say Tesla versus Verizon or something.
Okay.
It gives you the weird idea that somehow or another the black swan, the 3x V movement, the big move, is going to be way more likely in Tesla than in Verizon, and that's absolutely not true. I mean, from all my years, because I mean, it, when I say the 3x move is all of a sudden if somebody decides to buy the company up 2.5x or something. Just because a company's a sleeper in terms of its everyday trade and never moves, it doesn't mean that the implied volatility will tell you that a small volatility stock has virtually no chance of that happening. And a stock that bounces around all over the place does. That's wrong. Because your sleepy stock could just as easily be $20 and somebody take it over at 30 as one that bounces around more. So it can't price the possibility of a big move. It prices the possibility of the stock bouncing around on a normal basis for the stock, because some of the biggest takeovers I've seen were General Foods, Kennecott Copper, those kinds of things. They didn't trade for crap. Yet Superior Oil had a high volatility, was always going to be taken over. When it finally did, it was taken over at the same price it was trading at.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got to be careful on that one. But when you trade an index, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to take over the index, are they? that would be tough. S&P futures now down 2, NASDAQ futures down 4. But we're excited about this, and Greg is going to keep us, and obviously people that listen to Stocks and Jacks are going to have an easy way into this. So it's fun, and the ideal situation would be somebody to do all that study and then call a broker, knows what the hell he's doing, like maybe our guys. That would be ideal, wouldn't it, Greg?
It's always smart to talk to a person who's got one of those licenses.
Yeah, but nobody's ever smarter than you these days, right?
It doesn't hurt to run, you know, you never... Never want to do it running blind.
Just no.
Bounce your idea off somebody else.
By the way, it's okay. It's good for futures too, right?
It's good. Yes.
It will be soon.
It does. We're limiting it just because futures are leverage, and we're leverage on leverage is not the greatest first step. So,
no.
So, you know.
No, we're not recommending anybody's first trade be like natural gas futures or something. That would not be the right thing. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at cognoshr.com. Cognos HR. Innovation in Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Round up the usual suspects.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. Now, time out. Greg Pappas in studio. Matt Byrne on the board. SP futures down a buck, Chuck. NASDAQ futures down, well, they're flipping back and forth between unchanged and down a buck. So, not much going on this morning after a rally on Friday. Maybe everybody's out looking at the eclipse or something, or watching reruns of the girls' game yesterday, which was, by the way, that was a pretty terrific game. Unfortunately, I like the Iowa team, but they didn't win. That's what happens. The bonds are up now 8 basis points, 4.46. They keep creeping, and that's not really good for the market, but we'll see if they keep creeping. The bond up 5 basis points, 2.45. So what do you think, Greg, the European Central Bank, the price of their balance sheet looks like when they bought it, their bonds at negative interest rates, and now they're 2.5. Do you think they're like, they paid, what, 130, and now they're 60? Some along those lines?
We're choking on some of those.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Maybe they don't care. Over in Asia today, we've got the Nikkei up 354. That's 0.9%. Things have been going up, down, up, down. 39,347 is the Japan Central Bank is continuing to try and put money into the system. Hang Seng up 8, call that flat. Shanghai, they finally are open. They're down 22. That's 0.7%. 3,050. You know, Japan has dropped. I think they give a little better read on their inflation than we do. The real wages, Greg, have dropped 23 months in a row. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Inflation, you know, people's increase in wages minus the inflation, and they just have a big union settlement over there, but only 16% of the country's union. So nobody else got a raise, evidently. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 110.6%, FTSE up 15.2%, CAC around rallying too. Up 49.6%. So they're following us on Friday. Again, on Friday, we were up 307 on the Dow, S&P up 57, NASDAQ up 199. Tried to make a stab at getting back up on the week, didn't quite make it. Oil down 66 cents, 86.25. So I'm going to say the 70 range is long behind us. Brent down 70 cents, 90.43. Natural gas unchanged at 175. Over $4 by me, but in the suburbs, that's not good. So it's got to be up 80 cents in 3 weeks, Greg. That's kind of a lot. Our above down a penny, 276. Gold up again today, 1380, 2359. How many months, years did we wait for this to go through 2000? Now it's up 350, like really quick. Silver up 36 cents, 2787. Copper up 4 cents, 427. We have Bitcoin up 3,000. Wow, 72,322. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports, man? A lot of stuff on this end.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Good morning, everyone. Currently 6:39 a.m. on April 8th, 2024. In Chicago, we're looking at 49 degrees this morning. High temperature of 66 degrees downtown today. Clear skies right now and expected for today's solar eclipse. The partial eclipse will begin for us in Chicago around 12:51 with totality at 2:07 this afternoon. Make sure you have the proper eyewear to view it. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 52 degrees this morning. Sunny skies for the whole day with a high of 75 degrees. Now, of course, in sports, you have the NCAA, all the basketball down there. In women's, South Carolina won against Iowa, 87-75. In men's, Purdue won against NC State, 63-50. And UConn beat Alabama, 86-72. In the MLB, Cubs beat Dodgers, 8-1.
3-hour rain delay.
Is that right? Yeah. White Sox lost to Royals 5-3. And of course, finally, we have hockey. Blackhawks lost on Sunday in their game against the Minnesota Wild. Final score 0-4. So I got, Chief. Back to you.
When is that series going to be mercifully over for the Hawks?
It's brutal.
The Bulls can't get going either. So they're going to be in the one game playoff for the right to get their ass kicked by Celtics, right, Greg?
Should be.
Isn't that the way it works in the
NBA?
That
should be, I think, not terrible.
Well, no, wait. The Celtics get a bye. The first two teams get a bye, I think.
Celtics get...
If they win the playoff, the one game in, then they got to play somebody 2 out of 3 or something. Then they get clobbered by somebody else. But, I mean, they're just not that good. They're missing like 3 players, which certainly hurts.
Who's at home, then?
Well, they should be at home against the should be the Wizards for the one game.
Oh.
There's one game playing, and then I don't know who the next one is. We'll figure this out by tomorrow. But do we have Mr. Flanagan?
You do indeed.
What's up? How are you?
Good. Yourself?
I'm hanging in there. It's a nice day today. It's going to be...
70. It's going
to be... I remember when John was young, which is a long time ago, whenever he had an eclipse... Nobody trusted any of these glasses. I can't believe you can buy these glasses for like 5 hours and they say, go ahead and stare at it. It would not be me. But remember the thing they would teach you how to put the box over your head?
Yeah, I remember doing this. I'd have to go back and check dates. It must have been like 63 or 64. There was an eclipse. And I remember you could do like a shoebox and punch a hole in it, look at the reflection on the other surface of the shoebox. Well, I think my parents thought my brother and I had lost our minds, but it kind of worked.
Oh, yeah, it worked. Definitely worked.
Yeah.
You know what he's talking about, Greg? You put like a box over your head and you punch a hole behind your head. And you look away from the sun, and the sun comes in the hole and puts a reflection, a big reflection, on the other side of the box. Then you can see the moon taking that part of the reflection.
Are you sure your parents weren't just messing around?
No, but that's what people did because there wasn't. Nobody trusted. I know my grandfather tried to look at it with his welding glasses. He said, I couldn't even do that. So, no, it's a big deal. I mean, you can really hurt yourself looking at it, or hurt your eyes. But and plus, the eyes don't want to come back too much if you burn the middle of your retina. It's not a good thing. But
I'd rather lose my sight over something else.
Did you see what they're doing at the zoos? They're putting all these sound mics out there, trying to figure out what the animals do in terms of how the sounds change during the eclipse.
Really?
Yeah. And they're trying to, nocturnal animals will maybe come out, so they got all these snakes slithering along. God.
When we start getting the online polls to the, eclipse meet with your satisfaction, what can we do to improve it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what can we do to improve the eclipse? One of the guys that I... in the industry that I have adult beverage with once in a while, his significant other just happens to have a family. Her mother lives in Cleveland, so she's off to there. I actually have relatives in Columbus, so if I wanted to go, I could have a place to stay. All the hotels are full. Why is this a big deal? Just because somebody said it's a big deal, now it's a big deal, or what?
I guess. The one in 92 or 93, I remember, which wasn't a total eclipse, but it was pretty much... Got pretty close for my money. And there was a little hoopla about it. People were out walking around in it and all that. But I don't remember them running up to it like we're seeing this time at all.
Well, I can remember when I first heard about these things. I mean, we were real young. People, scientists would like travel to anywhere in the world where there was one because they wanted to do all these studies. Here's a really stupid question. I don't think you guys maybe do know the answer. I mean, obviously here, they're every like 25, 30 years or whatever. How often is there an eclipse someplace on Earth? Is it monthly or quarterly? I mean, if the moon's got to get in the way of the sun a lot, you would think, if it spins around all the time. I mean, is there one per year someplace on Earth, or is it one per month? I have no idea.
I don't know if it's one per year.
Are we talking about lunar or solar?
The solar.
It says this is the Royal Museums of Greenwich, between 2 to 5 solar eclipses each year, with a total eclipse taking place every 18 months or so.
Someplace
on Earth.
It could be in the middle of the Pacific where nobody's going to run out there and watch it, right? Mm. I like watching the lunar eclipses. They're kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've photographed them through telescopes. I mean, they're easier to look at. You're not blinded by it, but it's dramatic if you have a clear night to see this, because it really, you know, it just shows you a different version of your cosmos than you get certainly in the daytime, but than you ever get at night too. They're great fun.
Are you a believer, as our fellow Notre Dame man Beldo? I just hope we're not as nutty as he is, but maybe he's not. Are you a believer in that there is people from other planets have a base on the other side of the moon that we can't see, and the astronauts that have been up there are sworn to secrecy?
Well, I keep an open mind. I can't say yay or nay.
He was the guy, Greg and Matt, you guys aren't going to believe this, but I was at my last Notre Dame game that I'm ever going to go to. It was the UFO game, the Lightning game, against Central Florida. So they had this huge storm, and of course, just to show you, everybody's going to think there's a story here. There is. So it's halftime, right? And of course, when you go to a college game, it's abusive, the amount of commercials when you're in a stadium. And there's somebody on the sidelines with big orange gloves, and he tells the referees when to stop play for commercials. And there's like 25, 28 stoppages per game, maybe 30. I mean, there's a lot of them. So they have a stoppage with like 2 minutes to go and a half for a commercial, right? Meanwhile, the storm is coming. And I'm thinking, what is wrong with these morons? Why don't they make it to half so people can go find... I mean, it was really an ugly-looking storm coming. And we were on the side where you could see it coming right at you. So why don't these morons just hurry up on the half, forget the commercial, and everybody get in protection? They don't. So they come back from commercial, and all of a sudden, my brother, of course, being a brother, doesn't believe anything I say. All of a sudden, they said something to the effect, John, of, would usher number one please report to some place. And I nudged him. I go, Dan, they're going to evacuate the stadium. Why do you think you know everything? Dan, have you ever heard that before? You see the storm coming? What do you think that's a code for? It's like Mr. Clean to United Airlines. Somebody just barfed, right? I mean, duh. And sure enough, would everybody please leave the thing? Players leave the field, blah, blah, blah. So like a minute to go, when we could have just done without the commercial, everybody flees the scene for like 2.5 hours. Well, there's this massive lightning storm. So I think they were on, what are they, on NBC 10 or Channel 7? I don't know which one they're on, but they keep showing the lightning. And in the lightning are these things that look like they're UFOs. They look like saucers flying out of the lightning. So I go to the gym, and there's our buddy Beldo. And I said, hey, Beldo, did you see the game and all the alleged UFOs? He goes, everybody knows they fly into the lightning to recharge for the trip home. And I go, what do you mean everybody knows? Everybody knows that. What's the matter with you? You graduated a good college. You should know. That's where they get their juice to fly home. You know, I think how much juice is in a lightning bolt? And I go, I think probably a lot. So guys are going to fly here from the other side of the cosmos in the hopes that there's a lightning storm so they can get home? Okay, then. Or maybe they got to just get back to the moon. What, you know, whatever. Anyway, enough with that, Jen. We're going to talk. The market is kind of slow here this morning. We've got the CPI number coming out on Wednesday, so we'll be kind of lurking around waiting for that. We had a lady in Chicago died suddenly, with a Cook County clerk. Yarbrough is the name, correct? And she went in last Monday. Yep. Everybody said she was seriously ill, and guess what? They were right. She didn't make it, unfortunately. What... when we talk about city government and so forth, Jen, what does that post do, city clerk? I mean, what part of the city's world do they take care of?
Well, she was the county clerk.
County clerk, which, sorry.
And, yeah. And again, that's okay. It's the city clerk, of course, you know, handles, you know, registrations, you know, vehicles and so on. The Cook County clerk, since 2020, has also included, you know, the depository for documents of real estate transactions, so the recorder of deeds, which used to be a separate office, and is also a registrar of titles, which is too much to go into today, but the two offices report.
Titles for real estate?
Yeah.
Okay.
They rolled in together in 2020 after Karen Yarbo had been elected clerk. She was elected clerk in 2018 after being serving as recorder of deeds for, I think, two terms. And before that, she was in the state house, you know, kind of, you know, an ally of Madigan.
She's pretty highly thought of, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, she her husband was, I think, mayor of Maywood, and Yarborough's father was also mayor of Maywood before that. The Cook County Clerk's Office has, you know, it administers Cook County elections, although the city of Chicago has its own board of election commissioners that, you know, staffs the polling places, trains the personnel, tabulates the results, and then they're rolled in with Cook County clerk's records for all the other municipalities and townships' data in the elections. So she's got her job, you know, every election period, whether it's primary or general election, is a pretty significant one. It also handles, you know, all the vital statistics, so birth, death, marriage records, domestic partnership records, notary commissions, business aliases, all these things are handled in the Cook County Clerk's Office. And I mean, I think she did some very good things, but one of them being that you can actually track real estate transactions now online. You can get uncertified copies of documents by downloading them. They're indexed by your tax ID number, which, you know, was unheard of when I started working in real estate 50 years ago. You had to go in and search around in the dusty books in the basement of the county building, or, you know, have a friend somewhere who could put a search into a computerized database that various companies maintain. But you couldn't, you know, sit at home and search real estate titles. And now you pretty much can. You can see copies, you can download them. They're not certified. You could use them in a legal proceeding. You have to get a certified copy. So that's
Back up a little on that. What's the drill on that? I have not. We were at one time, my brother and I were thinking about getting our Irish citizenship, right? Being dual citizens. So you had to go through. You had to go get all your. You had to have a full string, a history of one of your grandparents had to be born in Ireland. Okay, which my brother and I have. Both of our grandparents were born in Ireland on the Irish side. So actually, both of our grandparents on the Italian side were too. So you have to make the full string. You need your birth certificate. You need your parents' marriage certificate, the Irish parents' birth certificate, their parents' like marriage certificate, their birth certificate, and then you have to go to Ireland and get the birth certificate of the grandparent. You know, when I say you have to go there, you got to figure out what county they're in, and they're pretty good about getting it for you. I went to the county building, you know, Jen, all I did, how are you going to do this after people are all cremated? I essentially went to the cemetery and wrote down the names of death and everything, and I got everybody's stuff. And I have this whole string back. But I even said, well, my grandparents, I don't know when their marriage certificate was. And the guy says, well, figure out the oldest kid, and we'll go like 3 years before it, and we'll do a search for you. And I said, okay, then. But every one of them says on there, first of all, you can barely read them, but you can read them. It says on there, not for anything other than for what I was using it for. You know,
genealogical purposes or whatever.
Yeah, you can use it for that, but evidently to get a certified copy, you got to be one of you guys. You got to be an attorney. Now, is that just a job for you guys or what? Not that I needed a certified copy, but what's that all about?
Well, it's been a while since I requested a certified copy of anything, and I, as long as you're, if it's a record you're entitled to, for example, your own birth certificate, you should be able to request a certified copy, and you pay for it. It comes with, you know, an attestation with a raised seal, saying this is a true and correct copy of what's on file in our offices, and it's signed by the clerk, or, you know, a pro forma kind of signature, so that it's accepted as, you know, a, what's really on the record, and it hasn't been tampered with. You can rely on this thing. And I thought you could order those without being an attorney, as long as you were entitled to have a copy.
I don't think I could get, like, my dad's birth certificate, even though he's dead, which is weird, because you would think I'd be able
to. Yeah, this is the privacy concerns now have just made, it's made general research difficult, but it's made genealogical research, you know, frustrating.
What is, for those that don't remember, Jan did a thing for us a while ago. Actually, it must have been 4 years ago, Jan, but that the census stuff is 70 years. They just came out with the 1950 data. Who the hell are we going to hurt if we come out with the 60 or 70 data now?
Well, you know, industrial relationships of householders, so this has always been kind of a sensitive issue. So what somebody was called in a census may or may not be what the official family story was.
All right, explain that. How do you... I mean, the stuff from my grandparent or the Howe house and with seven people, it didn't say what anybody was. It just listed the people in the house.
Well, it does mention the relationships to the household. So that started in 1870. Before that, they listed everybody, and it was, you know, if you were, it listed your name, your age, your race, your place of birth, and so on, but it didn't say what the relationship was of any of these people living at this address. In 1870, they started actually saying, who's the head of this household? That person would be Grandpa so-and-so, and everybody in that household was listed in terms of their relationship to that person.
Oh, okay, all right, fair enough.
Son-in-law, daughter-in-law, sister, brother, servant, what, you know, whatever the connection
servant
was.
How would you like to be that guy?
Yeah, that's what. And that's, of course, lying. In the 18th, some of these professions are pretty interesting. So you see a whole page of the City of Chicago census in 1870, and everybody on the page is a prostitute. So they didn't pull punches back then. So,
Susie, live in hooker. Joe, live in janitor. Like, really? Anyway,
the idea was that these relationships were sometimes not what people had been told they were, and people whose, you know, actual identity might be compromised in their own, you know, image of themselves or the image of anybody else, that you could find out things about.
You might find out your father wasn't your father.
Yeah, you know, the word, like this thing in Chinatown, she's my daughter and my sister. You know?
God.
Things like that were considered nobody's business, because, and it wasn't so much that the other data was so sensitive. I mean, how much you earned, or how much rent you paid, or what your job title was, and so on. I don't think that really was the dominating concern, but I do think the relationships, and to some extent maybe the ages too, and people do fudge ages on the census all the time.
Well, Janet told me that they get everybody who's in there, and every once in a while, every 10 people or 15 people, they pick on one person and ask them a lot more questions.
Yeah.
So they pick out my grandmother from Ireland, and I don't know if she spoke much English. They're quizzing her about her education, and she's like, fourth grade, somewhere in there. she had no, they probably were all, the grades were all probably in one class. She had no idea what grade she was in.
Right, probably two room classroom or something.
Anyway, so this stuff, you can go to the county. And by the way, they are pretty good at it. I mean, they were nice to me.
Yes. I mean, my copy of my birth certificate fell apart a long time ago, and I went to the clerk's office. This is about 7 or 8 years ago, and, you know, ordered one, and I had to be that person. I couldn't order it, say, for my aunt or somebody else, even if they were dead. Can't do it.
So I would have thought that I could have got one for my mother and father if they're dead, you know, because especially if they had the death. By the way, you had the death certificates too.
Yeah, and, you know, just as an adjunct to this, the archdiocese, you know, has some of the same restrictions. So sacramental records like baptism, confirmation, marriage, there's a 74 year limit on them, I think, where you can get anybody's record if it's more than 74. No, it's more than that. It's like 80 or 90 years now, I think, and it keeps changing as time marches on. But you can't, you know, get just anybody's baptismal record or marriage certificate from, say, 1940 or 1950 yet. So they've got some of these same privacy concerns the census does.
But we hear people getting that all the time, where people go to Ireland and say they can't find the birth certificate, so they go to the local church and there's the baptism certificate or something. I mean,
And if it's within, if it's far enough in the past, there isn't any problem with it. So I can get from the county clerk's office, I think now I could, for genealogical purposes, I could get a birth record for somebody born in 1935, 1934 or something. I think it's 90 years now. Or pretty much any other record that's at least that old. It's newer than that, and I'm not a party to that. If it's not my own record, there's restrictions on it. So,
what happens if one of these Catholic churches are closing? What happens to all those records?
They go to the archives of the Archdiocese, which is at Monroe and the Kennedy, in a kind of a nondescript-looking building, and all the registries of the closed parishes have been microfilmed, and you can search them on microfilm. You can't look at the actual books anymore. And any parish that's active, they still maintain their own records. But the Mormons, through Ancestry.com, have got all the Chicago Archdiocese records up to about 1925. And if you have an Ancestry membership, you can search
how did the Mormons get involved in this gig?
Well, you had to ask them. They believe in baptism, just as many faiths do, but they also believe in post-mortem baptism. So you can, if you find enough about your ancestry, including your great-great-grandparents, and you have a Mormon connection, the Mormons believe in having all of those people in your past offered baptism into the Church of Latter-day Saints, so that you have a connection with all of the people who you will be joined with after you die. But these other people have to be baptized too.
How do you get somebody who's dead to tithe?
Well, you don't. I have to say, I mean, it's an impressive thing if you go to Salt Lake City and look at their records, because it's mind-boggling, it's simple, and how minutely it's maintained and how organized it is. And when I was there in the 70s, nothing's really online. You could do a lot of research there, but I was staggered by what they had. Absolutely staggered.
S&P futures down 2. NASDAQ futures down 8. John, we'll be right. I went there once too. It was interesting. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349 708-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
I can't help thinking somewhere in the universe there has to be something better than man.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Hall. Greg Pappas in studio, Matt Byrne on the board, and we have John Flanning in Zoom. SP Futures up a quarter, NASDAQ Futures up a quarter. So that's why we're talking about some interesting other stuff. I went to the my buddy John Nigerian and Dr. J had a pal who was an interesting character. He was from, what's the place way out west, John, that's all very highly religious? What was the name of the place? Wheaton? He was from Wheaton. And he was
Wheaton College.
Well, I don't know where he went, but he was seriously Mormon, and we went out skiing, and he wasn't skiing with us, but we met him down at the temple. It's pretty impressive. Hmm. You walk in, and there's a big picture in there of John Smith invents the tithe. Those don't know what a tithe is. You're supposed to pay what, 10 or 20% of your cash to the church, and they call it a tithe, and you owe it to them, right?
Right.
And so I kept telling him, gee, look at the grin on John Smith's face when he invented the tithe. And they showed people like winging bolts of cloth and everything over the desk to him, and him with his grin on his face. Whatever. I was always kind of a smart ass. But there's places in the temple you can't go unless you're in the inner group. But John, it's so tied together with money. His buddy that we met for lunch, a real nice guy, well, he was... Had his, I don't know what business he was in. He sold advertising to Mormon radio stations, and from like the church or something. I don't know. So how do you not walk in and walk out with a sale? You know, and everybody's trying to. And of course, he had the obligatory drop dead gorgeous wife with 7 kids that all were blonde hair, blue eyed, right? And I'm thinking, doesn't get any better for this. And so I walk into the temple, and some guy walks up, and he shakes my hand, and he goes, hi, I'm Joe. And I said, well, I'm Tom. Do you have a friend? Do you need a friend? And I go, well, not really. And he goes, well, I could be your friend. And I'm thinking, who's this guy? Well, it turns out he owned like the biggest construction company in Utah, and 4 hours a week he was like a greeter in the temple. And I'm thinking, John, we grew up Catholic, and everybody kind of kept together, but nothing like this. It was.
Well, I give them A for effort, Tom, the Mormons, as far as maintaining their whole system. When I went to Salt Lake City in the 70s, I got an Amtrak pass. I was gone for like 3.5 weeks, took some time off from work without pay, in addition to vacation, and ended up in Salt Lake City longer than I expected to be because I was finding stuff in other libraries along the way, whereas genealogical research, and I found in Salt Lake City that my great-great-great-grandfather's brother had marched with Brigham Young across, the country. Started out in Massachusetts, was in Nauvoo, Council Bluffs, Iowa, and then ended up in
Well, they were
Utah.
Persecuted everywhere.
Oh, it was a fascinating story, but as soon as I was able to verify it, this is the family I was connected to, and, these librarians were extremely helpful, pointed out stuff I didn't know that, verified what I kind of thought was going on with my dad's family's ancestors. But I had it all tied up when I left there. They're very courteous. I had registered when I went there, with my home address and everything. They don't just let anybody into the library. But I called home a couple days later. My mother answered the phone. She said, "We have a bunch of Mormons at the door today looking for you."
God.
Because they'd already kind of notified their people in Chicago with this name and address. And she said, will you please get off this genealogical kick? You're driving me nuts.
Well, talk about basic industries. You know what everybody buys in the church? your underwear. The guys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the one piece. Whatever.
Well, you can get the t-shirt short separates, too. I think separates. How's that for a weird... Anyway, because when you go on those... they all go on that mission. You see everybody in their white T-shirts. That they're all bought that from the church.
Right. I see them, you know, in Chicago, there's two usually on bikes. They have white shirts and, you know, black slacks and ties. And I've met them in Europe. You know, I've met them in lots of places I've traveled. They're very visible. And, you know, all you have to do is, like, mention that you're Catholic, and they'll kind of, like, bow out of the picture. They're not too interested in talking to you if you're not susceptible to
it. Well, they own a huge chunk of Hawaii.
Oh yeah, they're, you know, I don't badmouth them at all.
Oh, I don't either. I don't either. You know,
I think, you know, religious practices are everybody's personal business. I admire certainly what they have done. I mean, they wrestled, you know, an amazing economy out of the Utah wilderness, and, you know, it's a beautiful place, but it's not a particularly hospitable place for development. And the Mormons made it work.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, not, but they're very pragmatic. As a matter of fact, you know, the idea of everybody laughs that it was, you know, you get to have two wives. Now, why anybody would want two wives, I don't know, but, or three. And you say, well, gee, that's kind of a wacky deal. Well, if you're persecuted in, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and every other place, and half your guys get killed, and you want all the girls to be able to, whatever, guess what? Everybody has to have two women, right? I mean, it's,
right.
I'm not saying that it's right, wrong, or whatever, but it's, it's pragmatic. It's,
right. I mean, the Hebrew Bible has the same approach when it comes to being fruitful. This it's not like they invented anything, the idea of polygamy, certainly. You know, where it really took off, Tom, was in England. In the early days, and even today, the Mormons have had great success with proselytizing in England. And I didn't know this at the time, and I kind of read up on the history over the years since I found out a Shirtail connection to it in my family, but it really is an impressive story.
You know, wasn't the two fastest growing religions a few years ago? I don't know what they are now. I thought it was Mormons and Muslim.
They were, and they were, you know, they had a lot of, I think, you know, credibility in the things they were able to accomplish. They knew what they were doing, and just like any organized religion, not all of them succeed, not all of them grow. Some of them, you know, become embarrassed or humiliated or die out. And that certainly isn't the case with the Mormons. So I'm respectful of what they've done.
Well, John, what did you make of, you listened to Carl on Friday, and we saw the market down most of the week, and then it was up pretty heavy on Friday because of the labor report. You know, I've been pretty critical of them not matching up, but they actually came together a little bit on Friday. The household and the establishment, the household's still way behind, but they caught up a little bit, and Greg and I were talking earlier on break that there's still an awful lot, no matter how you can deny it, but there's still an awful lot of part-time work going on that's caught in one of the surveys and not the other, because people are not getting their full amount of hours that they think they you know, it used to be the 40-hour week. I don't understand the whole story in Congress about going to the 32-hour week. I mean, if the place is open 5 days, what do you get, have five employees for every four now? I mean, how the hell are you going to do that? People only work 4 days even though you're open five? I don't get that, but they're not asking me. Anyway, I mean, if we go back to let people enjoy themselves on Saturday and Sunday without having to work those days and without having your cell phone on, I mean, I think, you know, that'd be a step forward, maybe a step back, but really a step forward. But anyway, Jen, we have the interest rates creeping up here in the 10-year, which I look at more than the short term. Because that's what a lot of stuff is priced off. Certainly your mortgages, and if you're going to build a building, you can't use a 90-day rate. You have to use the 10-year rate, or certainly if you have a business. And I see that creeping. I see this inflation not really going down. Let's put it this way. Inflation is lessening, has lessened a little bit in terms of the rate, but the price level, they're not even trying to attack that. So the stuff about an awful lot of people not ever being able to get a house or a car or anything, that's all still in place. You got oil prices creeping up. How far can we push this? The amount of consumer debt is going up, and I'm not saying, you know, Armageddon is going to happen with the eclipse. And I'm not saying it's going to happen ever, but it seems like, to continue our discussion of earlier with Greg, that if you've just been in the market the whole way, and we're very confident no matter what happened, it was going to be up this year, even if you had a couple of bad months or something, I don't know that that tone is not changing here. I think it is, to the point where, you know, a lot of people should at least, depending on your station in life, should be a little careful. It's almost, I don't know if it's the mirror image of 82 where you wanted to take your money out of 16% CDs and put it in the market and be left out of every party. I mean, imagine if you would have said that to somebody in like July of 82, I'm going to take my money out of CDs at 16% and buy the market. You'd have been left out of town.
Yeah? Right, yeah.
And now to say, hey, you know, I've had a great run in stock really since 87, or 82 for that matter, 82 and then again in 87. I've had this great run for however many years. Maybe I'm going to just, you know, bow out for a little bit. You'd be left out of the next party. But I don't think the decision is near as crazy now as it was back then. 16% guaranteed money was a lot to give up.
That's true. Well, you know, in looking at the numbers last week and hearing you and Carl digest them, you can see that there's things that are sort of institutionally hidden, and maybe it's turned out to be deliberate. It certainly seems to be working in favor of the people who are saying, why is everybody so angry about, you know, how they're doing? Things are really good. But you can't really grasp what's going on with those labor numbers when you add to the mix, you know, an influx of people that, you know, are not identified separately in the study, as far as I can tell. And you've got all sorts of, you know, funny business with the number of hours worked and wages or hourly rates increasing, but total payrolls are dropping. To me, this is a deliberate attempt to just confuse everyone and give them some leg to stand on when they tell everybody, don't worry, everything is just okay. You're smoking something if you think things are not good. In addition to the job number problem, Tom, I'd like to hear some discussion somewhere from the higher-ups about the future of careers or career paths, because this is not the same thing as talking about employment or job numbers. The idea that you can have some path to follow or some plan, and if you're coming out of high school or college, whatever, and you've got to make decisions about what to do and what your options are. I don't know how anybody today can really, you know, plan with any certainty on having a career, meaning something that even if you don't stay in a particular part of it for very long, you've got a skill set that gives you some usefulness in a bunch of different places, and you can always be considered part of some identifiable group doing what you do and knowing what you know. And I don't know how people today can approach that. I just don't. It's, you know, maybe you can cobble together a couple part-time jobs, neither of which have anything to do with each other, and make ends meet. I don't call that a career. And maybe that's a bad word to be using now, because we don't want people to think they even have a shot at a career. Maybe that's what all this is designed to do. Certainly with AI looking on the boundaries, I doubt if there's going to be too many things that human beings can call their own anymore. So,
we usually have trying to have dinner as a family every week, and my nephew's in the metal business. I say metal business. They make stuff for people, and, you know, spare parts and whatever it is, and and some of the stuff coming back, you know, some of these places doing a little more business because of the China stuff maybe, and still not, you know, kicking ass over the place, but doing a little more business. Well, all of a sudden, a lot of firms need a real lot of, like, repair parts, new parts. I mean, stuff falls apart. I mean, they do some work for, like, Tootsie Roll. Tootsie Roll has been in Chicago forever. It's one of the biggest plants here. There's only one Tootsie Roll plant. What the hell did he tell me? He toured the plant. He said it was the most amazing thing he ever saw. It's like a million pieces of candy a day come out of the place. It's unbelievable, the machinery they have. And, you know, and stuff breaks down, whether it's a, you know, the thing with all the metal wheels on it, if it's a conveyor belt, anything. I mean, all of a sudden, those things, you know, they'll last 30 years, but not 300, you know, it's type of thing. And he says they constantly have trouble hiring people. And they're paying good money. I don't know how much, but they're paying good money. But in the city of Chicago, if you're our age, or even, you know, say you're 40, nobody looks at metalworking of that, or producing stuff as a career, because everybody's been laid off for the last 40 years. I mean, there's no, I mean, Pullman used to have 3,000 people. They get nobody. I mean, you know, American Can, nobody. Ream Manufacturing, nobody. I mean, the even, well, how big were the Hawthorne Works for Western Electric? Nobody. So it's one thing, like, to come out of school and be able to do that stuff, but most people still think you better do something else at night and learn something else, become a lawyer or whatever, because you're not going to be, somewhere along the line, this temporary push is going to right the ship, and 10 years from now, there's not going to be anybody who's a mechanic or something, or an auto mechanic or whatever. And everybody's going to go, now those guys, if you listen to government, in 20 years, everything's going to be electric car. There's not going to be an auto mechanic anywhere. You know? So, I mean, you're not going to want to have that as your career path, given the history. Yet now, we're trying to figure out that, guess what? There might always be going to be people that have to put machinery together or whatever. But still, I don't know if I had an 18-year-old kid, if I would say, you know, don't go to college at all. I'm not saying maybe a junior college, whatever they wanted to do, but don't learn anything other than how to work a punch press, because we're not even knowing, you know, are there going to be any punch presses 20 years from now? Because when Pullman was here, there were all kinds of places. I mean, if you didn't want to make a part, there were 10 people bidding for it. And there were huge businesses just as being satellite firms to the big manufacturers. John, it's all gone. I mean, a little of it's coming back, but is it enough to make that your career? I mean, I don't know. I would say probably not. I mean, wouldn't be like I didn't want to know how to do it. It's like, would I like to go, you know, I was young, would I go work in the oil fields for 3 months, make a boatload of dough, pay for my education and everything else? Maybe, but I don't know that you want to be a 60-year oil worker. I mean, when everybody tells you everything's going to be solar in 50, I mean, it's real hard, I think, just saying what you're agreeing with you, which I shouldn't do, but I'm agreeing with
yes.
you.
Yes. Well, you know, it's hard to change the mindset of parents who maybe themselves didn't go to college or didn't finish college, and their dream was to set their children up as, you know, as better poised, you know, for success down the road by going to college. And I think it's a real disillusionment for parents to hear any kind of talk that, you know, your children shouldn't be thinking about a college degree because it's not going to, you know, support them. And, you know, it's better that they look at some trade or, you know, something to do with their hands, whatever that may be. This is a terrible, you know, realization by the elder generation that, you know, this is not what we planned for. This is not what we were sold ourselves and what we always, you know, kept as something we set our sights on for the people who came after us. There's kind of going to have to be some kind of re-education, I think, to, you know, take those people down gently. And, you know, it's not an embarrassment not to go to college. On the other hand, you know, we're losing competitively with, you know, other parts of the world that, you know, have seen trends maybe sooner than we did, or awakened to what's really going on sooner than we did. And we're losing a competitive edge, I think, by downgrading education or trying to think of alternatives to education or career paths. So I think we're at a very tough time right now to make plans in any way. There's no career that I can really think of now that is safe, meaning something that you can plan to be working at 15, 20 years from now. Not even a lawyer, Tom. I don't think.
Well, John, why do we? I'm not saying you're getting on the other side of the argument that a lot of people on the show have taken, and clearly a lot of people that I talk to have taken. I am the strongest supporter of education. I think anybody on the show, and it's do I like the institution of Notre Dame now charging $75,000 a year and this kind of stuff and this massive whatever it's become? No, but I'm going to say that my education, the University of Notre Dame and University of Chicago, I've used every class I used. I mean, if I didn't take marketing at Notre Dame and University of Chicago, they wouldn't have wanted me as the head of the marketing committee on the SIBO. And I learned a lot there. But I also knew something coming in. I mean, I vaguely remembered it. I wasn't a marketing person, but at least I understood the principles. And if I go to another spot, it's made me amazingly flexible. never intimidated. I got on the board and they get some consultant in there. Well, there's nothing that he talked about that I hadn't at least heard of. So I'm a huge proponent of it. But am I a proponent of these massive institutions charging this kind of money just, you know, so they can get a name out of the place? No, I love what Kevin's doing. But I don't understand if you know, it ties into Stocks and Jacks, the Jacks part of it. When you start seeing where the portals and people flying back and forth, you know, I got news for you. I mean, if you and I, if somebody dropped, you know, $2 billion on us tomorrow, I would bet at one of the things we did with it, we'd go to the city of Chicago. God, I don't want to deal with those people. But we'd buy CVS. We'd buy Tilden Tech or someplace that is being totally underutilized and say, all right, this is going to be the Illinois extension of Ivy Tech where Kevin is. And we're going to have college classes. We're going to have certificates. You're not just going to come here and learn how to work a lathe. You're going to, by the way, you're going to have some classes in accounting. God, John, the people I run into when you talk about the basic stuff, addition and subtraction, basic marketing or surveys, people are experts. I said, how do you think they even do a survey? Well, I have no idea. How do you have an opinion on it when you have no idea how they're even done? I would like to see that, but you know what? In that school, if we start doing this for the right price, okay, get good, you know, get good lectures. We got some right on staff here for the staff and they contribute. And we start doing that, and we say we can do it for $10,000 a year. You know what? We're not flying the men's lacrosse team across country and giving them free tuition. We're not doing the same thing with the women's softball team. Or you're out. If you want a club team, knock yourself out. We're not. Why should the other students at Notre Dame, now they claim it's all covered by football, but what if it wasn't? I'm saying most schools aren't. Why should I pay part of my tuition to have these people flying all around the country on no tuition so they can play a sport that I don't even play? I mean, is it part of the college experience? Yeah, but it's useless in terms of what are we doing? Are we providing an education for a certain amount of money with the best people around to teach it and get the people the hell out of here with some knowledge? It was okay at Notre Dame when it was $3,000 a year and the football team got a little bit of largesse and you made a few bucks on it. But there's other stuff. The idea that I should be paying at UCLA to fly the women's fencing team to Rutgers for a game, screw that, John. You know, I'm just saying. I'm
with you completely. The fact that, you know, the trouble is when you support these schools with your tuition dollars, that, you know, prioritize how they spend money differently from how the people funding the places are, you get things like Title IX into the mixture, and all of a sudden the sports that don't pay their way at all are being supported with the largesse of people who, you know, care diddly squat about any of these other sports. So this is all some ridiculous kind of competition, you know, an amenities race, or, you know, a race to offer more, you know, sports programs, useless degrees, whatever else, just to attract people and to get your name in the paper. Well, this isn't an education project at all, in my book.
No
wonder people come out and they are unable to answer basic geography questions or history questions or edit a sentence of their own or anybody else's with any accuracy, or be able to get any paycheck for the skills they've used.
But somehow, so, Janet, it's becoming you don't need education. You might not need that kind of education, but
right.
You need something.
We're peddling the wrong educational product, certainly.
But you don't want to go into a food store and the person behind the counter can't make change. You don't want that either. I mean, you don't want to dumb down the population. You want to upgrade the population, one would think.
Right. If this were a case where people actually came out with, you know, accounting skills, or bookkeeping skills, or, you know, mathematical skills, or writing skills, I guess you could make a case, well, this college that's producing these students with these skills doesn't have to have a classics program or a theology program or ethics or, you know, philosophy or abstract studies that aren't really, you know, convertible to paychecks right off the bat. But if they were doing a job in other ways, there'd still be, you know, an opportunity for people to eventually someday go back and get additional classes in one of those abstract fields because they had learned skills that were sufficient to get them a paycheck and to support a family and their own life.
Well, you would hope that a kid that Jan Flanagan and Eric would teach English and creative writing and stuff to, if he needed to, he could pick up accounting 101 and start reading it and learn something. You would hope that there was some intelligence there. that coupled with the ability from grammar school to add and subtract, you should be able to. I mean, you could buzz through it by yourself if you wanted to, and at least learn something. Or go to right. or go to Moraine Valley at night, for God's sake, and take a basic
how to write a literate, you know, post on X or any other social media platform, and not embarrass yourself by showing that you don't know what a caps key is, or how to spell this word, whatever else. With all the tools we have for writing, I just find the prose that's, you know, all around me unreadable. I'm not saying I'm any genius when it comes to.
What do you think of me, Mr. Numbers? That when I use spreadsheet,
Excel, or
yeah, Excel, that I have to when I put the number, I use it. I still add the stuff up by calculator. How bad is that?
Well, I mean, I used to do my grading when I was teaching on Excel until it became more of a hassle to maintain, you know, the formulas or whatever for whatever I was doing in one class versus another. That I finally just went back to the calculator and the heck with this. It's not that I'm not bad-mouthing Excel. I wish they would teach people how to read spreadsheets and how to create an Excel document if they're going to do anything, you know, in an IT setting. I wish that they could produce students who could do that. They could probably get a job somewhere and parlay it into something else. But even those minimal skills aren't valued. So I don't know what people are supposed to be learning.
Well, I think what you need to do, Jan, we'll head off. We'll get Audrey coming. I hope you're going to hang with. We'll talk about real estate. I think people have to look at it. You got to be flexible. You can't say, you know, I know nothing about marketing and I don't care. I'm not going to take that course, because all of a sudden you might be with a firm. Now, you know, we've got Greg in studio with us today. I mean, Greg is a guy, he's been trading his life. He knows a lot about the restaurant business, which is some marketing. To say that he doesn't or shouldn't know a speck about marketing, how do you do that? He's worked for a couple of restaurant places. Well, marketing means getting people in the door, right? Now he's putting together a real nice website that's going to help out a lot of people, I think, that listen to Stocks and Jacks. Well, you've got to get your name out for that. To say you don't want to know any of this stuff, how do you not know something? I mean, anything you do involves it, right?
Yep.
I mean,
my mother's advice was, you know, what she followed in her own job history was, even if you hate a job, learn everything you can of it, and don't tell too many other people that you work with about it.
And you know, by the way, when you're ready to leave, leave. It's a
yeah.
S&P futures up
and
3.
On your terms, when it suits you. Yeah?
S&P futures up 3. NASDAQ futures up 20. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, and welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, front of the board. SP Futures now up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 30. We're trying to continue the rally of Friday, which came in on the nice job report, which is a little surprising since the 30-year was up Friday and it's up again today. So, kind of two different messages there. I don't know whose message is right, but they do conflict some, it seems. We have a little trouble here with my machine. There we go. So we're going to get... Why don't you do a quick traffic weather sports while I get this thing working?
Yeah, sure thing. Well, currently right here in Chicago, Illinois, 49 degrees this morning, mostly sunny skies. We're looking at a high temperature of 66 degrees downtown today, so look forward to that. Clear skies right now and expected for today's eclipse. The partial eclipse will begin for us in Chicago just around 12:51 with totality at 2:07 this afternoon,
What's our totality, like 80% or something?
It's supposed to be pretty significant. I looked it up, and let's see if I can get it right here. It was over 90.
Really?
Last I checked. So yeah, we're pretty lucky to be in our spot. And Chief, I checked this out as well. The next total eclipse that's going to be happening in Illinois in this century is going to be September 14th of 2099. So when they say it's a once-in-a-lifetime chance, they really do mean it. I'll be 99 years old if I make it that far.
Well, one will be close like the one in... The next one close is going to be 30 years, I think.
Yeah, there's an annular in 2048 and another annular in 2093. But it's still a wait.
What's an annular?
Annular, you're asking the wrong guy. I took astronomy a while ago.
I think it means close.
It's just a different kind of eclipse. But yeah, make sure you get the proper eyewear to view that.
You know what, you've seen them all. You know?
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, you can see it online as well. But it's cool to see it in person, the whole thing changes. But of course, down in Phoenix, Arizona, 52 degrees this morning, sunny skies for the whole day, and a high of 75. NCAA, we have women's, of course. South Carolina won against Iowa, 87-75. And men's, Purdue won against NC State, 63-50. And UConn beat Alabama, 86-72. That's it for basketball in NCAA. In the MLB, Cubs beat Dodgers 8-1. White Sox lost to Royals 5-3. And finally, we have hockey. Blackhawks lost on Sunday in their game against the Minnesota Wild. Final score, 0-4. So I got, Chief, back to you.
Real quick, we've got bonds up 7 basis points now, 4.45. Just continue to creep up. 5 basis points up, 2.45. Market Nikkei way up 354.9%. Hang Seng up 8, call that flat. Shanghai reopened down 22.7. So not much going on there. Europe, we're rallying here, making up for. They didn't get the full rally on Friday like we did, so they're doing some today. DAX up 135.7%. FTSE up 24.3. CAC around up 61.8. Oil down a little bit today, but still 86.25, down 66 cents. My gas broke through $4 on Sunday. I'm not real happy with that. Brent down 75 cents, 90.42. Gold up now down 70 cents. It was up $13, 23.44. Still pretty darn high. Silver, which up 35 cents, now it's up 17 cents, 27.67. And we've got crypto up huge here. Well, it was up 3,500. Now it's up 2,800, 72.157. Do we have Audrey?
Yes, you do.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine, but it's nice to see the sunshine for a change, and looks like spring might be here.
Yeah, hey, one of our listeners is confirming what you and Nancy say about homes. A house is sold at $925,000 in Lake Forest. Gives me the address here, but I don't really need to know the address. Evidently, Odd, and you had been mentioning this, someone bought the home for $390,000 last year, removed the wall between the kitchen and living room, opened the space up, put in a new stove and refrigerator and appliances and so forth, painted everything white. I guess it must have been horrible colors. And they paid $390 for it. So just making the place walk-in livable and a little nicer, more room and new appliances. And it was, it's a $500,000 profit. What do you think they put in the place? 50, maybe?
Oh, God, no. No. I would bet the stove up in Lake Forest is close to 50 if you're dropping a nice Viking or something in there.
Okay.
I would bet you if you're... time you've taken down a wall and painted it, paint cost a fortune. So even if you're painting a small house, you're talking $25,000-$30,000. So if it's a typical, let's just say it's a 3,000 square foot house, you're going to drop maybe $40,000 then if you're not doing it yourself, because paint's almost what, $80 a gallon, depending upon what you buy. Get somebody to get the wall down, buy your plywood. So let's just say conservatively they spent $250.
So you're saying I would be over my budget. It sounds like just a hair.
You know, say if they for round numbers, say they bought it for $400, put $250 in it. You know, then by the time you have other expenses, another maybe $100 or so. So yeah, maybe they made a couple hundred, but it's a lot of work.
I'm gonna bet we're not getting the full story here that the landscape, the grounds don't look anything like they did. I bet it's a full deal.
If they walked out and made $100, maybe $200, maybe it depends, because as you well know, once you open a wall, you don't know what you find. And maybe you had to move the electric, and maybe you had to put new flooring in, and one thing leads to another, and you spent any time. Maggie's chipmunk just ran past the door.
Oh, God.
Excuse me, everybody. So it's just, it's like them saying realtors make so much money, the buyer's agents make so much money, but they haven't taken anybody around for 6 months and showed them 80 houses and figured out how much you actually make.
Jen, you, I don't believe you were, you were ever a Friday night guy. Once in a while, we used to go to this bar in South Bend. I couldn't find it. My life depended on it today. Remember, they had a good pool table. When I say good pool table, good pool players there, and we used to go play there maybe once a month. And they had a fish fry every Friday. And I remember this poster, and why I didn't buy one, I'm sure they were around, was always remember everybody else's job is easy and everybody else is paid overpaid except you. So I could remodel that house. Really.
To live by.
Yeah, we're. But I know when I did remodeling and tried to do it like after work. Even if you work to midnight, by the time you showed up, got your preparation done in 45 minutes, did an hour and a half cleanup, you're lucky to get... I mean, you try and put 500 hours of your time when you have a regular job into remodeling a home. That stretches out a while. It's hard to do. And if you buy people, if you get people that... I mean, Audrey had her cousin's place, her husband's cousin, who really was a great guy, and he died prematurely. And just to repaint his house was like $35,000 or $30,000. But the people who did it show up with like 8 or 9 people at 6 in the morning. They knock it off in a day, in like a 14-hour day. They have all the stuff prepared. It's a real business when people want a place turned around that quick. Now, you and I could do it, but we're not going to do it in a day. It might be 3 months if the two of us are hacking around at it, right? It's just different. Time is money.
Absolutely.
And so what are you seeing, Odd? I wanted to bring this one up. And, Jan, we were talking a little bit about the housing downtown. I don't know. I can't imagine where that idea is going. But what's going on with the commercial stuff? Some of these buildings are starting to move, aren't they? At a depressed price.
Did you lose Chad?
I don't know.
No.
Jan, you with us?
Well, some of them are beginning to move, but they're being really written down in price, and the lenders are taking a haircut on them. I don't think this is a good time to be trafficking in a commercial property and expecting to make much money on it. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm glad that some of this stuff seems to be coming available for development, but there's also, I think, a lot of distressed loans that haven't hit, you know, sheriff's office yet, and loans that are coming due and in the commercial market, and I just see a whole bunch of stuff that's, they're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Well, the building we're in, and I, you know, I'm somewhat privy to numbers that probably shouldn't be, but their taxes, you know, what I was telling you this whole time, in the last 10 years, I'll say up from 2010 to 2020, they like quadrupled. I mean, they just went up every year. And, you know, because business was, I guess, okay or whatever. Still wasn't really okay, and it's part of the loop with all the exchanges going down. But now they're at a number where I don't see, and this place is doing better than most. Out of the 12 floors, I'm going to say four of them are empty. The rest of them are still people in them. Now, would their taxes have dropped down as precipitously as every year of fight?
Probably not. Not without a struggle, or, you know, a long, arduous fight. Assessor's office. But they're going to have to come down. There's just no way that they're going to get anybody into these places. And this is, of course, going to take, you know, a toll on every other taxpayer who lives outside of downtown that doesn't own commercial property, because they're going to be, you know, pushed to make up the difference. I find it, you know, a bad time for, you know, people who are homeowners who are expecting there to be some kind of predictability about their tax bill, when you've got, you know, every indication that commercial real estate is just, you know, a wasteland, and we don't expect it to bounce back enough to support the kind of tax expectations these properties had. They're never going to be taxed at the same rate or, you know, yield as much, at least over a, you know, a certain period of time, like they did in the past. And we have no way of filling that budget hole without gouging everybody else.
Well, and what's the tax situation in the, I mean, Odd does stuff every place. Manfred's got a couple of places she's doing in the city now, but basically your home base, for lack of a better term, is probably 25 miles around your house. Make that 50 miles, which is Orland, Tinley, Palos, that whole nice area. What is that? Are those taxes been flying up lately, or no? Or they been going up?
Might have been flying up. So it's I had actually looked at it, right, since I moved here. And I want to say it's about 19 years ago. My taxes are up over 40%.
By the way, that's not bad. Because I did a study back to 2000, and I had most Illinois taxes up 250%.
Yeah. I don't know. I would say, or like, I know, like, you know, a few of my friends are around here, and they're up. I'll give you an example. One that was, like, maybe, well, I would say 42 when she moved in, are right around 8. So that basically is double. But it's just, you know, it's a lot. And I live in one of the, we have a great school system here. So a lot of my bill is taxes for the school district. But for people who are looking for a great school system, that 230 school district in Orland Park and Palos area is very, and Tinley is well known for their great school, but their tax bill is maybe about half of that.
Well, you have a, kind of, well, I want to get back to what, you know, places you're selling, because you're still busy, but the, not get back to it, actually get onto it, but Orland still has a real serious retail base, right? Which is,
yeah, we've got a very good, we've got different malls, we've got great restaurants, there's all kinds of retail. We did a great job of building Orland, and, you know, shout out to our current mayor for doing a great job for all the business people in town.
Those big new places, maybe this is more of a Jan question. I don't know what just popped into my head. Well, because Odd and I drive around on there all the time. But Jan, when a place like University of Chicago or Loyola doesn't have one, but or somebody, you know, or Northwestern or somebody puts up a massive, huge building for a, you know, for a medical center in an area, is that totally tax-free from day one because it's nonprofit, or do they have to pay anything?
Yeah, I mean, if it's owned by the tax-exempt organization, it's going to apply to the real estate, no matter what's being done there. So, yeah.
So, what if you can what happens when you guys, I mean, I don't know how if the mall's doing as good as it ever did, but I think they're still doing pretty darn good. Contrast your stuff with what if you were the Lincoln Square Mall was, which was carrying the place well, and all of a sudden they're, like, gone. Or like Old Orchard, which is half the size it used to be. What does that do? It just gets dumped on the people who live there and their taxes fly. Because I noticed big differences when I did this study between some areas that are still kind of covered, and when I say covered, they still have commercial and maybe a manufacturing base, and the places that don't. And if you all of a sudden get two or three places close up, everybody else just gets gagged. Like Evergreen Park, that happened to them when the plaza closed, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think it did. You know what? I don't know enough about it to speak to it that well. Thank God it hasn't happened here. But to just an aside, I noticed that Stratford Mall, which is out in the western suburbs, which used to be Stratford Square, I heard that they might be closing. So this is like the whole end of an era type of kind of the way people live. And it's also, I'm going off on a tangent here, sorry, but it's also... You used to go to the mall with your mom. You used to go shopping with your friends. You used to go hang out in the food court. It's another thing of people online shopping, not going out. All these places where you got your stuff, you hung out. It was a thing to go Christmas shopping, Mother's Day shopping, whatever it might be. And it's just not happening. So to John's point and yours about filling these places up, it's... you're seeing such a huge shift in society.
Yeah. It used to be. It's shopping, Audrey, you know, at Tom, you'd meet relatives. My mother would meet her sister, her cousin, all of us kids, and we'd go to Evergreen Plaza and have lunch at the Carson's.
Oh, I love that place.
And just browse around, you know, just shuffle.
Remember Devler's, John?
Yes. These were like, This was a chance for everybody to get together and gossip and find out what the kids are doing. And, you know, I always really enjoyed it because everybody seemed to be in a pretty good mood to be out and about. You were around other people. You'd run into friends of yours or other relatives, you know, just in poking around with the plaza. And I can't even imagine people wanting to do that today.
Well, man, I've been just kind of sitting in front of whatever. But I remember when you went downtown, get a load of this. This is talking about ancient history. When you had before you had cell phones, I mean, I'll meet you downtown. Okay, where the hell am I going to meet you? Well, you could always
under the Marshall Fields clock.
Or the waiting room. They actually had a waiting room in Marshall Fields. Remember that?
Yes.
There was a place with a whole bunch of chairs, and it was a thing where you could get Cokes and ice cream and stuff. And if you say, I'll meet you downtown at Fields at 10 o'clock, there the person was sitting in the waiting room eating ice cream. It's like, talk about an anachronism, but... But Odd, you're doing a lot of business, but I'm going to say, without digging into your stuff, which I always stay away from because it's your stuff, your clientele is kind of, I'm going to say, the people that not 100%, but have the money. It's an older couple who is selling a house, buying a townhouse cash, or it's somebody who's selling a three-bedroom house and had another baby, and they've got most of the money. They're kind of, everybody's kind of trading up or down. It's not like, you know, I don't seem to have as many people who are a couple that, unless they get some money from the parents, that are saying, yeah, that $500,000 house, that's mine. I mean, you used to have more first-time buyers, it seems to me, than you do now.
You know what? It was very slow for first-time buyers, I thought, in the last 6 months. But the thing is that people have to live somewhere. And the house formation for the Jet generation is now coming into full force. So they are out there. But the misconception, and you hear people talk about it on TV and the news when they don't know anything about it, is that what's holding people back is, you're 20% down payment. You don't have to have a 20% down payment to buy a house, even conventional. You can buy a house conventional for 3 or 5% down. You could get one on FHA. If you're lucky enough to have served your country, you've got a VA with no money down when you purchase something. And that goes for a lot of, actually, VA are also something that a spouse can use and whatnot of somebody who serves. So if you want a house, it's a good thing to investigate for anybody who served our country. But it's that you have to live somewhere. Rents are outrageous. Rents are running for an average home now higher than your mortgage rate would be.
Yeah, that's bizarre, isn't it? That's what you were telling me over the weekend.
There's no inventory, hardly. But I would say if for young couples who are looking, if you can scrape, if you're renting a place that's $2,500 a month, let's say, probably realistic is for a small house or a two-bedroom, three-bedroom townhome, you're talking maybe $25,000 to $3,000. You know, and then you've got to put down one month security deposit, or you know, sometimes you're that's there. So now you're at $5,000, and a lot of landlords I've noticed are asking more than a month security, whether it's a few hundred or another thousand. So if you can scrape together $5,000 or $6,000, you know, maybe you can buy a house or a condo instead, and then you're not just subject to renting whims. See if you can scrape your 3%, 5% together. Because say you could find a condo for $250, it's 25, you know, at 10%. So if you could, you know, put down just part of it at that, you could probably get together and get a foothold instead of just being at a landlord's whims in this time.
Well, how tight is the rental market? I was talking to this younger gentleman the other day, last week, and I don't know if he... But they were, you know, looking for all the resume and the job stuff and everything. He offered to pay him a year in advance, and they wouldn't take him.
It depends. And actually, some people who have, excuse me, a difficult credit situation or coming out of a bad thing, I've had them put up anywhere from 3 months to a year rent in advance sometime to get into a place. Because the people who used to look at you and maybe give you a second chance, some of the requirements are so difficult now, and a lot of it is just to protect the landlord, too, that it squeezes a lot of people out. But people have been known to put 6 months to a year, pay a full year in advance.
Well, everybody, let's just say that in the Chicago area, and I don't get this from Aud, I get this from the guys that do the mortgage stuff, some areas are very pro-occupant, shall we say, whether it's a renter or it's a somebody. I mean, some of the stories I hear in some states where people haven't paid a mortgage the entire 7 years they've had it and managed to still be there. I don't know any of these.
Audrey,
go ahead, John.
Something I've been meaning to ask you, Audrey, what you're seeing in the condo market and its affordability. Are you seeing assessments or like in a homeowners associations, like if you're in a community that has assessments, are these affecting the affordability of the properties? Have they jumped, over the years? Do you get word on the street about what's going on with them?
You're right. I've seen a lot of the associations around here that have, gone up quite a bit. And there's some beautiful developments in the area here that have features like the pool and the clubhouse and things like that. But now a lot of them, you're talking the assessments for maybe a two-bedroom condo, running maybe in $400 to $500 a month, and then you throw that on top of your taxes. And a lot of people who like the area said, I can't afford that. I need to stay like at least in the $200 range or, whatever for an assessment. So to your point, you have to pass the heating, cooling, maintenance on to somebody, and you're going to pass it on to the people that are living there. So I think it definitely changes your mortgage, what people can afford. And a couple of my clients could not look at the condos they wanted with the maintenance that on this one was like $600 a month. And that's a good portion of a mortgage payment for a lot of people who are looking at a condo.
Well, do you see,
I would think with like insurance and construction costs, repair costs, roofing costs, all of these must make a huge dent into the reserves of a condo association and really jump the monthly payments for the owners.
Absolutely. And so again, somebody's got to pay that, and a lot of times it's hard for people to make that. Like on paper they could easily afford the $300,000 condo, but all of a sudden if you're tacking on another $500, $600, $800 a month, then you know that changes the whole picture, and you have to rule that one out.
Well, do you hear any? Do you see if anybody? I mean, you've got a lot of these communities in your area. You see any of them like cutting back, where like during the day there's not a security guard, you can just drive in and out, or all of a sudden they let outside people into the golf course and when they didn't before. I mean, is there anybody leaking at the corner, should I say?
I haven't. People out here who have a gated community want a gated community, so that they're going to keep. Now, I don't golf, so I don't really pay attention to that. So, that I don't know. I know there's a couple of golf courses out here that have sold their land off, and then there's a couple that have sold one part, and then that was part condo. It was a huge golf course, and years ago they sold part of it off to be a beautiful townhome gated community out here in Orland. And then a year ago they had finally put a deal together to sell the rest of it off, and that deal fell apart. Of course, all the people who live there and have a golf course view are still very happy about that. So it's interesting about golf courses. I can't tell if, and you guys would know more about that than I would, is golf still the hot thing to do? Are people still taking their sons and daughters out to learn to golf? Or is it still the thing to do?
I think it's kind of coming back a little bit. I think it was kind of out for a while, but I think it's kind of coming. But remember, Jan,
that was kind of my feel, too.
Yeah. Jan, Aud and I, when I was on the SIBO board, we'd go to a few of these places, and I'll take a minute, but... And we were always, because I was chairman of the marketing committee, you know, I'll use the term boondoggles, right? Where you take all the member firms to some hugely nice place. Wasn't even a place we went in Florida, the only 5-star thing in the whole place where we had the wine tasting and all the other crap.
Oh, was that Turnberry?
No. Yes. Turnberry was almost as nice. It was on the other side. It was in Fort Monmouth. Anyway.
I don't know. They all look the same to me.
This one was absolutely gorgeous. Well, they didn't have a golf course, and what they did is, there's these couple areas around there, and one of them, Michael Jordan, was building a place. You'd go play golf on these courses that were absolutely spectacular, that were private clubs for these places that were going up. But in order to defray the cost, they'd let you go play for like $600 a round or something. From like 10 to 12, they'd have to actually offer it to the high-end hotels around there. So we'd go with three foursomes or something the SIBO would pay for, and we'd go to these things, and I'm playing this incredible course. But I think from 10 to 12, they let other people on there, blasphemy, so that, you know, the $5,000 they dragged in for every day was enough to defray the cost of the course a little bit.
So they let the riffraff play for the bucks.
Yeah, they let the riffraff play for 2 hours, and I was part of the riffraff. But, you know...
No, bless the bleach.
Yeah, we were the great unwashed. Anyway, but, yeah, John, you should see these they were down there, there's no basements or anything, so you couldn't really tell by the foundation how big the place was going to be. But some of these houses, they would have stakes in the ground. Well, a couple of them looked like shopping centers, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, they were like 10,000 square feet. You know, I just have my memories of golf in Florida are too bad. I can't even think about it.
You know what happened to Aud, John, and when we got a dash? It's the worst that could happen to Aud on a golf course. We're playing at Turnberry, which is a wild bird sanctuary. So they give us a box lunch. I mean, we didn't have any breakfast, right, because we're at these meetings. So Aud's on the putting green, and, you know, we got the golf cart. She's got her lunch on the front seat. Some bird comes in and nails her bag of chips. Aud is outraged. So the bird runs up in the tree, and he's eating the chips, squawking at her, like laughing at her from the tree.
He ripped the bag open. I was saving those for later. I was so hungry. He took it right out of the glove compartment, and he's ripped it apart, and he's caught him, and I'm throwing the golf balls, I'm throwing the clubs at him, and he just ate my whole damn bag of chips.
So that's what happened. So that's Aud's bad memory of golf on Turnberry. What
a great scarred forever.
Turnberry is a place that Michael Jordan played like the 50 holes before the Miami. Remember in the playoff game way back in the day? Turnberry's gorgeous. Anyway. John, thank you. Thank you, Aud. SP Futures up 12. Matt, nice job with all the characters we had coming in this morning. S&P up 12. NASDAQ up 60. Might try here for 2 days in a row. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty, call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics, listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed, back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.